States against Capes. Ms. Sansonetti.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Gabrielle Sansonetti. I am going to argue on behalf of Mr. Tappas, the defendant in this case. The question here seems to be the day for it, is based on Cunningham. What is the difference between a rote statement included in the record for purposes of checking off a necessary checklist and a meaningful consideration of a mitigation factor? In this case, defense counsel presented evidence at sentencing that the defendant was suffering from glaucoma, a degenerative eyesight disease, which would render him blind ultimately.
So let me ask you this. Who, in your view, under the Cunningham framework or under whatever broad framework you want to use, has the burden of explaining to the district court the link between the characteristic, here the declining eyesight, and factors that would either push you toward a lesser sentence or a greater sentence?
In this case, admittedly, the link may have been argued stronger on behalf of the defendant, but it does seem self-evident that an individual who is suffering from glaucoma is already legally blind and is assuredly going to be going blind, has less of a chance of recidivism than without that physical ailment.
Except Mr. Tappes apparently has this wild ride with diminished vision. I know glaucoma is a progressive disease. It is actually something that is increasingly more treatable, and I guess he's been getting some treatment for it at the MCC. But I don't know that he's the best exhibit for somebody who's going to refrain from crime because of bad eyesight.
Well, Judge, I think that in the record, defense counsel did establish that it was degenerative and that in this particular case, it appeared that he was continuing to lose his eyesight despite treatments and that there was an indication that he would be blind in the future at some point in time. He did go on a wild ride, that's true. The sentencing did take place a significant time after that.
How long after was the sentencing? A year? Or?
I think it was over a year, Your Honor. I can't be sure of the exact dates, but I could,
March.
Of course, find that out and supplement the record with that information.
No, I just was curious.
I mean, typically it takes longer than a year even to be sentenced and to plead. Nevertheless, at the same time that this is ongoing between the arrest and the sentencing, Defendant Tappas is continuing to degenerate. And again, I think to your question, where does that link, who establishes that link? If one were to meaningfully consider balancing this defendant's specific deterrence with his physical ailment, it would be obvious to anyone that he has an extensive history of vehicle hijacking and auto theft.
It was a huge history. It's actually only from March 2013 to November 2013, so it's actually pretty quick.
That was very quick. Nevertheless, his condition is continuing to progress. I don't think that that is anything that was
disputed
in the record.
No, I don't think that's in doubt. I think the question is, why does that mean he deserves a lesser sentence?
Well, I think at the end of the day, it would be difficult for one to continue their path of auto theft if they are blind. And
that's just one factor under 3553A. There's general deterrence. There's, the severity of the crime to try to assault with your car a bunch of FBI agents.
That's correct, but the issue here is, did that one factor get sufficient consideration?
I thought your argument, the way I read your brief, was simply that this was an unreasonable sentence.
Well, I think it's unreasonable.
Not a Cunningham issue.
I think it's unreasonable in the view that the court did not procedurally consider all of the mitigating arguments. In that case, that this would be a Cunningham issue, and Cunningham is cited in our brief.
Well, it is, but the brief really doesn't put together the argument. And it wavers between substantive unreasonableness and then this, well, maybe the judge should have said a little more, leaving it fairly confusing as to what's actually being argued, I have to say.
And
let me just, in terms of the substantive sentence, has this court ever held that a properly calculated guideline sentence was unreasonable?
Actually, Your Honor, in Cunningham, I believe that defendant was sentenced at a low end in the guideline range, and yet the court still found that there was not meaningful consideration.
That's a different issue. That's the you know, did you say enough as a district judge issue. But in terms of the result, properly calculated guideline sentence, have we ever said that was unreasonable?
Not that I am aware.
I'm not either. And then, well, we've got the Cunningham issue here, sort of.
Well, Your Honor, I think the thrust of our argument is that the judge didn't give the defendant's physical ailment sufficient consideration. I think that the thrust of our argument, and as I understand the government's response brief, is that the judge did, in fact, weigh a number of the 3553 arguments. 3553A factors, but in the end skipped over really the most important one in our view, in that this physical ailment would directly affect the defendant's specific deterrence or his ability to recidivate. In this case, blindness would clearly impact whether he was able to continue on the path that he had stayed on.
But certainly would have a serious effect on his ability to go steal cars and drive them around. So, yeah.
I would think that would be the logical conclusion, Your Honor. At the end of the day, that factor was not given enough weight by this judge. And in order for a defendant to really receive full consideration and be sentenced to a reasonable sentence, the judge must consider all of the mitigating factors, those that are not frivolous, and there is no argument here that this was not a frivolous argument. This was, in fact, one of his main mitigating arguments, and the judge did little more than mention age and medical condition.
He gives it a nod. He says age, physical ailments, physical condition.
Age, physical ailments, physical condition. But beyond that, the judge didn't really provide any rationale for why that would not measure up or undercut or score against the judge's lengthy consideration of the criminal history of the defendant.
Okay.
With that, I'll reserve my time.
That's fine. Yes, Ms. Malizia.
May it please the court, Catherine Malizia on behalf of the United States. To briefly address Judge Hamilton's question earlier, whether or not the question is whether a procedural error was committed or whether the sentence was substantively reasonable, the government submits that the result here would be the same. This court engages in a two-step process when considering the reasonableness of any sentence. The first question is whether there was a procedural error. In this case, there was no procedural error. The district court adequately considered the arguments and mitigation by the defense, including the defendant's health issues, as well as his age and his decision to self-surrender. And then balanced this against defendant's extensive criminal history, noting that although he was a criminal history category 4, this was likely understated in the guidelines.
So but the judge never actually uses a term that's either the same as or synonymous with blindness, does he?
No, I believe, as the judge put it, he considered, quote, the defendant's age and his physical ailments and his general
right.
physical condition.
I was just looking at that page. And you know, being blind does restrict one's activities, particularly for things like driving or going out and stealing cars.
That's certainly true, Your Honor. But the question here is not whether or not this restricts the defendant's physical activities. It's whether or not the court gave consideration to the defendant's arguments and mitigation. And the court clearly did. It then weighed those against the seriousness of the offense in this case, which was quite grave. It involved injury to innocent bystanders, in addition to assaulting a federal law enforcement officer. And the court considered the defendant's long, long pattern of recidivism. We're talking about 11 prior felony convictions, 8 of which weren't even counted under the guidelines. And despite significant stints in incarceration, I believe the total was approximately 11 years, the defendant continued to recidivate. The district court took this very seriously, and when weighing it against the defendant's arguments in mitigation, clearly was not persuaded that a below-guidelines range sentence was warranted here.
How old was Mr. Tapes at the time of sentencing?
I believe it's pronounced Mr. Tapes, and his age was 52.
52 Tapes.
If the court has no further questions, the government would ask that this court affirm the sentence below. Thank you.
Apparently not. Thank you. Anything further, Ms. Sansonetti? All right. Thank you. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes.
And we thank you for your efforts on behalf of